You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Got some very talented people here at MC3 that lead us in worship and make videos and teach our kids. It's exciting. So we're doing this series called Spoiler Alert, and of course, as I said last week, you can't do a series about movies without showing a movie clip to introduce what we're going to be talking about this morning. So I just want to give you a little background on what we're about to see here. This comes from the movie Les Miserables. Which is very French-sounding because it's French. You might know it as Les Miserables, depending on, how you read French. So this is by the way, I'm sparing you from the musical version. We are not doing the musical one right now, but what we're going to do is we're going to see a scene here where there's a guy named Jean Valjean, played by Liam Neeson. And in this particular clip, Jean Valjean has just gotten out of prison. And the way it worked back during this time in France is that once you were released from prison, you got a parole paper. It was a yellow piece of paper that you were required by law to carry with you wherever you went. And basically it marked you as, okay, this person, they're a parolee, there's nothing. You would carry that around, you would never get a job, no one would ever trust you because you were in prison. And so they would carry this around. And so Jean Valjean is released from prison, trying to find a place to go, and eventually there is a priest who lets him stay in his home. And so this priest allows him to come and stay at his home. He offers him dinner. Jean Valjean is hungry. He's got nothing to his name. And so he is here at this priest's home and has dinner. And then they go to bed for the night. And that is where we pick up this scene. So there you've got this crazy kind of wild story about this man, Jean Valjean, who is afforded a dinner and a night at this guy's house in the middle of the night, steals his stuff. The next morning he's captured, and the priest, the bishop, says, you know what, no, you not only did I give this to him, but he forgot the more expensive items. And of course, the story goes on, and it's just a really cool story about just changing people, about grace, which we'll talk about later. Spoiler, we're talking about that today. But it's a cool story about grace and just watching this man who, as this is the beginning of the story, who was offered something that he didn't deserve and how it changed the rest of his life and how he then continued to offer that to others, which is something else, spoiler, that we're going to be talking about this morning as well. But I want to get this idea, and I hope you saw the power of that moment, that this man didn't deserve anything. And the priest not only said, yes, he can have my silver, but gave him even more. And the spoiler that I want us to look at today as we continue looking at these words of Jesus on the cross is this. The spoiler is that we get what we don't deserve. We get what we don't deserve. Now listen, last week the spoiler was, we don't get what we deserve. This week is, we get what we don't deserve. There's a difference here, because last week we talked about mercy and how we deserve punishment for our sins and how these people that were literally nailing Jesus to the cross at that moment, Jesus is saying, Father, forgive them. He wasn't giving them what they deserved. He was offering forgiveness instead. And so today we're talking about we get what we don't deserve, and that will make sense here a little bit more as we go on. But it kind of comes along the lines of that clip from Les Miserables where Jean Valjean got something that he did not deserve. The mercy that he was shown was not being thrown into prison. And he could have just said, no, I refuse to press. The bishop could have said, no, I refuse to press charges. Give me back my silver. Go on your way. But instead, he gave Jean Valjean something that he didn't deserve. And spoiler, that's called grace. So before we get into that, though, I've been walking you through, again, this series is about Jesus' words on the cross. And that's the study that, the YouVersion study that Justin was talking about. And we've been going through a timeline here and just reviewing last week. And we're going to be walking through all the different things that has happened while Jesus was on the cross. And I talked to you before, of course, how the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, are four different perspectives on the same exact event. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can listen to the point from last week at mc3church.org. Or you can go to our Word, the Sequel series, where we went into depth about this, also at mc3church.org, along with the notes that are there. So we started with, we're not talking about the trials or any of the other things. The first thing that basically happened, beginning the timeline of the cross, is they were beating. And the Roman soldiers beat him, they placed the crown of thorns on him, and they mocked him. Then they forced Jesus to carry his own cross. Eventually, he couldn't withstand the weight, and so they had Simon of Cyrene carry his cross for him to the place called Golgotha, which is the Aramaic word, the Greek word is cranium, the Latin word is Calvary, and took him to that place. And then they crucified him. They nailed his hands and his feet to a cross and dislocated his shoulders so that he needed to pull up against these nails in order to exhale. And so the way a person would die when they were crucified is they were asphyxiated. They were also naked at this point. Again, this is all reviewed from last week, so if you're not sure what's going on. By the way, this took place at what was called the third hour of the day. The crucifixion took place at the third hour. And I'll come back to that in a moment here when we look at something that happens at today's part of the timeline. And then, of course, they placed a sign above the cross. And we'll also be looking at that somewhat today. But the sign was a declaration that was always placed above someone that was being crucified, who was being executed. And the sign was the charges for which they were being, why were they being executed. And so, of course, it was kind of unique that Jesus was signed, said, he is Jesus, King of the Jews. So that was his crime for which he was being executed. So that's what we looked at last week. Now, carrying on from there, the next thing that happened chronologically, because we're putting all these different four Gospels perspectives together, the next thing that happened, was the insults. And this is where the people, and we're going to go in more into depth today with that, but the insults and the cheap wine, and we'll also talk more about that as well. The insults and the cheap wine, and this is where the people just started insulting him. They were mocking him, they were yelling at him, and again, we're going to go into more depth today looking at that particular incident. And then you have, after that, then the criminals jump in, and they start insulting Jesus and mocking him. And then we have this conversation, which is what we're going to be looking at today as well, this conversation between Jesus and one of the criminals. And then you've kind of got, then you've got John. This is in the Gospel of John. You've got John, who is told to care for Mary. Now, I'm going to pause here for a second to explain this. So the way it worked, of course, in that culture, we all know this, but basically, you know, it was the responsibility of the husband to provide for his family. The women had basically zero rights. And if the husband died, then the husband's brother could actually buy the rights to his wife and basically marry her to provide for her. And this is a good thing. It wasn't a weird, creepy thing. This is a good thing, the way to provide for them. And actually, that's part of the story of Ruth. So if you want to look at the Old Testament story of Ruth, that's kind of part of that rule. But if there were no husbands involved, then it was kind of the responsibility of the son. And of course, the firstborn son, the oldest son, would be the one responsible for caring for the mother. And so here you've got this moment where Jesus is hanging on the cross and Jesus is dying. His death is coming. He knows that. Crucifixion, execution. And so he says to his mother, Mary, and there's lots of Marys in the Bible. Actually, in this particular story, spot in the story, there were four different people there. Three of them were named Mary. But Mary is there, and Jesus basically says to John, and so here Jesus is dying. Mary is alone. We don't know anything about Joseph at this point. We're assuming he's dead. Joseph, Jesus' dad. That's a whole other story. Jesus says to John, please, your responsibility is now to care for Mary. She is your mother now, and you need to take care of her. So that's kind of what this is all about, why this weird moment happens. It's kind of probably to Mary. And again, you know, they knew. I mean, if you're raising the Son of God, you probably have a clue that things are a little bit different. Okay. And so I'm sure that there was this part of Mary saying, okay, this isn't really going to happen. And the fact that he, from the cross, says, look, Mary, John is now going to be your son. John is going to provide for you. And so that was kind of like this, I'm sure for Mary, like a, this is really happening. So that's what happened. John was asked to care for Mary. And by the way, I have all of this stuff. I have the different verses and the Gospels where these come from. I don't want to take up too much time for that. But I probably at the end of the month, I will put this timeline on our website and then have the different verses there just in case you care to know kind of how it all went in terms of order. So that happens. And now we get to this next moment where there is darkness. And of course, you probably remember that if you know anything about the crucifixion story. And this is the cool part for all the animators and the people that make movies about Jesus, because then the creepy clouds can come up and everything's dark. And we don't know how it went, actually, but it said that the sun was blocked out and it was completely dark. And this is the big deal. This was from the sixth hour until the ninth hour, which on our calendars was about noon to three. So there was no mistake that people were like, oh, it was just nighttime. No, it was the sixth hour to the ninth hour. It was noon to 3 p.m. So let's talk about that for a second. The issue with the hours, when we look at a calendar, and of course we all lost an hour of sleep at 2 a.m. this morning. But we think of, right, it is right now forgetting the time change thing because that will really screw up this illustration. But right now it is approximately 10:49, 10:50, 10:55, somewhere in there. MC3 time is a little different than real time. But that means, because it's 10:45, 10:50, that means it has been, what's today's date? The 13th for 10 hours and 50 minutes. Right? You with me? Forgetting the time change, because again, that really screws things up. All the weeks. It has been today for 10 hours and 50 minutes. And then we will be going through this day for another, quick doing the math, 14 hours or 13 and then 10 minutes. I think I did that right. Woo-hoo! Anyway, so we're going to be in this day, and then in about 13 and some hours, it will be the end of today. And it will be tomorrow. And so we go midnight to midnight with our calendar. Jewish people did not. They went from sunrise to sundown. So a new day began at sunrise. And so when it talks about Jesus being crucified at the third hour, to them, sunrise, give or take, is about 6 a.m. And that meant Jesus was being nailed to the cross around 9 a.m. So that just to help you understand. And then when it said from the sixth hour to the ninth hour, if the beginning of the day is sunrise, so 6 hours after sunrise, 6 a.m. will be 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, noon. So at noon, that is when the darkness came over the land until 3 p.m., which was the ninth hour. From the sixth hour to the ninth hour, darkness was over the whole land. And this is important because there's a lot of things, especially just not even related to the crucifixion, but a lot of things related just to the Jewish way of doing things, that if we understand the day for a Jewish person to be sundown or to be sunrise to sundown, it changes things. And of course, even later, we're going to look into the fact that it was coming up on sundown and the Sabbath was the next day. And so for us, we're like, oh, it's coming up on sundown. There's easily like, what, 6 more hours? Well, no, not for them. The day was about to end. And so we'll talk about that next week when we look into some more of that. But just understand, that's with the sixth hour, the ninth hour. It's all based on sunrise, which again, give or take, is around 6 a.m. And so then you add your hours to that. So I hope that makes sense and helps you understand what was going on there. So that's kind of where we are now, catching up on the story, adding some more next week. And then the final week, of course, we'll wrap up the whole thing in terms of what is happening on this calendar. So let's go to the passage we're going to look at today, which comes from Luke chapter 23. The lights are going to turn on. If you have a Bible, you can go to the YouVersion app as well. Tap on Luke, tap on 23. I'm going to read it here, and then we'll come back and chew on it and look at it a little bit more. Now, again, this is one gospel, one perspective, one view on what is going on during the crucifixion. So this is Luke's perspective on what he sees as he's observing and writing things down. And so this is what Luke writes in chapter 23, verse 35. The crowd watched and the leaders scoffed. He saved others, they said. Let him save himself if he is really God's Messiah, the chosen one. The soldiers mocked him too by offering him a drink of sour wine. They called out to him, if you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. A sign was fastened above him with these words, this is the king of the Jews. One of the criminals hanging beside him, scoffed. So you're the Messiah, are you? Prove it by saving yourself and us too while you're at it. But the other criminal protested. Don't you fear God even when you have been sentenced to die? We deserve to die for our crimes, but this man hasn't done anything wrong. And then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus replied, I assure you, today you will be with me in paradise. So, keeping in mind this idea of getting what we don't deserve, we've got this little story of what's going on. And honestly, from our American, let's just forget American, from our human perspective, what is happening in this little vignette is some jacked up justice. It is messed up. Because the people that deserve to get the things aren't, and the people that don't deserve to get things are, and it's all twisted. And so I want to kind of break that down and look into what this is all about and how it makes a huge difference for us. Why it matters. So the first thing we see in this story of just jacked up justice, things are not, you've got Jesus. And Jesus is not getting what he deserves. So what does he deserve? He is the King. He is the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. He is the Son of God. And not only is he all of those things, he is also sinless. He didn't sin. He didn't do anything. And as we talked about last week, here he is on the cross dying. Dying a death, being executed for doing anything wrong. So if you're thinking about Jesus, and we just spent, you know, the first 20 or half hour or so worshiping, which is singing songs of praise, singing songs to God, to Jesus, telling him how amazing he is, how awesome he is, how wonderful he is. What we didn't do was say, would you all please stand up, and we're all going to swear at God right now and tell him that he's a bunch of crap. And tell him that he's a loser and that we hate you and there's nothing good about you anyway. Because that would have been inappropriate for multiple reasons. But that is exactly what is happening here. On a moment when the person that should have been worshipped by the crowd, instead, he was being mocked. And that's what we see there. The first thing you've got in this passage is the crowd watched and the leaders scoffed. So you've got the leaders there. The people are there watching. They're observing. The word watch means just kind of pay close attention to. And you know, they definitely weren't like, this is wrong. They were into it. This is interesting. Let's see how this plays out. Maybe they've got their popcorn. But at the very least, they weren't standing up for it. And so you got the people here. Then you've got the leaders. And the leader says the leaders scoffed. And the word scoffed is just, it's a mean word. It means to sneer at, to ridicule, to talk down. And of course, they said, he saved others. And whether they're having a play on words here or not, because Jesus claimed, now we know he did, but in their mind, he claimed to save people spiritually. He claimed to separate them from their sins. He claimed to forgive them of their sins. And they're like, well, he saved them. Why don't you save yourself now, Messiah? Come on. You can do it. What's wrong? Are you going to stand and tear it on the cross now? Oh, I'm coughing. I can't breathe. If you saved other people, save yourself, you loser. And that is exactly what's going on here with these leaders. And these are the Jewish leaders. These are the religious leaders. And here's the deal about what they said. They said, let him save himself. If he is really God's Messiah, the Messiah, that is, he is the one. Jewish people knew the Messiah. Messiah was, that is a Hebrew word. That means the anointed one, the one that is going to come, the one that is going to make everything right. The Jesus storybook Bible calls him the rescuer, the one that is going to make it all perfect. And Jewish people from the beginning have been waiting for the one, the capital O-N-E, that is going to make it right. The Messiah, he's going to be the one. And suddenly Jesus comes on the scene, and these, again, understand, like, here's literally what is happening. You've got Jewish religious leaders praying, Lord, please send your Messiah. Please send him. Send the anointed one, the one we've been waiting for. We've been waiting, and this is generations of praying. And suddenly they're praying this, and Jesus appears on the scene. They're like, oh, you're not him. No way. Let's kill him. I mean, that's the shortened version, a very shortened version. But that's essentially what is going on. And the Hebrew word for anointed one, the one we've been waiting for, is Mashiach or Messiah. The Greek word, and I've said this to you before, the Greek word is Christos. Or the Christ. And so Christ wasn't Jesus' last name. They're like, Mr. Christ, party of two? No, it wasn't his last name. It was his title. He was the anointed one. He was the one that people were waiting for. So he was the Christ, the Messiah, the Anointed One. And so they're actually mocking him. If you call yourself the Christ, if you call yourself the Messiah, then come on down from that cross. And again, how awful this must be. I mean, aside from the excruciating pain, but just the heartbreak. And of course, we talked about that last week. Just this, you know, literally the hammers are beating nails through his wrists, and he's saying, "Forgive them." And here these people are mocking him. And then the soldiers mock him. And it says here they offered him a drink of sour wine. Your translation might say wine mixed with vinegar or wine vinegar. The point is, this was a real deal. It was a wine that basically the Roman soldiers probably had nearby. It was kind of their cheap beer that they had while they were working. It wasn't anything fancy. And it was like, "Hey, you're thirsty? Here, have this to drink." And so it was meant just as another way of mocking them. Maybe Jesus wants a beer. "Here, you want a beer?" I mean, you know, you can think about any classic, like, movie where somebody's beating up on the bullies are beating up on the kid or the person, and they'll be like, "Here, you want a drink?" And they, like, spill it all over them or something like that. I mean, that's essentially what's going on here with these soldiers mocking Jesus and why they offered him this sour wine. It was junk. It was just another way to mock him. Because there's a second thing we're going to talk about next week, or maybe it's in 2 weeks, where he was offered a stalk soaked in a different liquid. And that's a kind of a different story, and we'll get to that when we get to it. So understand that this is different. So they mocked him by offering wine. And they called out to him, "If you're the king," and the sign said above his head, "You're the king, then save yourself. If you're the king, a king can save anybody, right? So save yourself." And then this is sort of a parenthetical note that Luke includes here, because the sign was already there, and he's just saying, "Hey, by the way, a sign was fastened above him with these words, 'This is the King of the Jews.'" So he's kind of explaining to his audience why these soldiers, the Jewish people, knew what Messiah meant. They knew what King of the Jews meant and all of that. These soldiers who are Roman, they are not Jewish. They don't have the background. And so, you know, if you're a Jewish person reading Luke's gospel going, "Wait, how would the soldiers know?" He's saying, well, there was a sign above him. And we talked about that sign last week, and that was put up there earlier, but this is why they were making fun of him and calling him the King of the Jews. And everybody understood what a king meant. They understood what Caesar meant. If you were the boss, you were the boss. It's good to be the king. And the king can do whatever the king wants. And so if Jesus is the king, he can save himself. And so they were mocking him for that. And then going on, it says one of the criminals then hanging beside him scoffed. And scoffed here, this is a different word from the earlier scoffed. This word in Greek is blasphemo. Blasphemo, and of course you probably heard the word blasphemy. And blasphemy is essentially, you know, speaking bad about someone to hurt their reputation. And so this criminal is blaspheming him. And you know, again, we mean that like, "Oh my God, okay, that's blasphemy." Like, yes, and it's way more than that. Like, don't just, when we hear about blasphemy, it's not just misusing God's name or something like that. It's the idea of taking something that should be valued, and because of your words or your usage of it, turning into something that's worthless. And so you've got this criminal there on the cross, and I don't know. I mean, maybe this guy's bitter. I mean, he is hanging on a cross. He is being executed, so, you know, you're going to go down fighting, you're going to go down screaming, whatever. And so he's yelling at, making fun of Jesus, too. "So you're the Messiah, prove it, save yourself, and hey, us while you're at it." You know, just get that in there just in case. But he's mocking Jesus. And so you've got all of these different people that are mocking and making fun of and being cruel. Again, don't forget, this would be hard if all these things were done to you and you were just sitting here on a chair, you know, eating your fun fruits. Do they still make fun fruits? Eating your fruit snacks. You know, that would be insulting. But understand that Jesus is dying on a cross. He is hanging stripped, naked, beaten, and bloody. And then on top of that, these people are hurting him. And so you don't need sticks or stones, like all of it. Sticks and stones and your words, all of them hurt Jesus. At this point, he's covered the whole deal. And so he's on this cross getting mocked, and that is messed up because he is the only one that doesn't deserve that. He's the one that deserves to be worshipped and praised and honored. And instead, it's just the opposite. He is not getting the praise he deserves. So then you've got criminal number one. And you've got criminal number one. And of course, we read this last week and we looked at the actual crucifixion part and how Jesus was crucified with two criminals, one on his left, one on his right. And one of the Gospels talks about how they had stolen something. So they were thieves, and that's why you might have heard the phrase thieves on the cross, or the robbers on the cross, or the criminals. They had done something wrong, had been convicted of their crime, and are there. And so you've got this criminal, and he is getting what he does deserve. He's the only one in this story that actually makes sense. Because he committed a crime, and he is being punished for it. He did the crime, he's paying the time. So he is on the cross getting what he has deserved. They were being punished. They were both out there for robbery. And this is kind of crazy because, you know, there's all sorts of laws and Roman law and Jewish law. And we're not even sure, you know, were these guys being executed by the Romans or by something that the Jewish people did. And that's what, let me back up. What made Jesus' crucifixion so unusual is that Romans were in charge of crucifixion. It was their law. It was their rules. And the Jewish people had basically forced this upon the Roman leaders. And so you've got Jesus being crucified. So these guys were being punished probably because of the Romans on the two crosses that they were hanging on. And we don't know why. We know that they robbed, but even Roman law, which was cruel and rough, obviously execution being a horrible way, or crucifixion being a horrible way to die. But here you've got these criminals dying for robbing. So there might have been some serious, serious robbery going on. They might have murdered someone in the process. Something bad is going on to these guys. So it's not like, you know, they just stole something and now they're dying. So there's got to be more to the story because the Romans wouldn't just crucify someone because they just, you know, they stole someone's silver. They might be put in prison for life, but they would never be executed for it. So there's something going on here. These guys did something bad. And so here they are, hanging on the cross, getting punished for it. And that's what we see in verses 40 to 41. It says, but the other criminal protested. So you got the one criminal mocking Jesus. The other guy speaks up. And we'll come to him a little bit more. But he says, don't you fear God, even when you have been sentenced to die? And he says, we deserve to die for our crimes. We did what was wrong. But this man hasn't done anything wrong. And so you've got this criminal, and he's basically just acknowledging for the sake of the story, for helping us to understand, you know, these guys belong there. There's a distinct difference between Jesus, who doesn't belong there, and these two criminals who do belong there. And so the criminal is, they're the only ones that are getting what they deserve. They did something wrong. They most likely killed someone in the process of their thievery, robberiness, and now they're being executed for it. And to the point where this guy admits it. Yeah, we deserve to be here. We belong here. We did the wrong thing. And so that's what's going on here. And the interesting thing about the word protested, we looked at this word a couple weeks ago, and it means to say, to rebuke sharply, to shut up. And it's the same word that Jesus used when he spoke to the storm. And so, and I said last, when we talked about that, like how unusual it is to hear something like, you know, this word being used for Jesus speaking. Because normally criminals would use that word. But Jesus was being that distinct. I mean, that's talking to a couple weeks ago, breadcrumbs, mc3church.org. You can listen to it. But we were talking about how Jesus spoke sharply to the winds and the waves. And so this is the same where he says, just shut up. And he says, don't you fear God? And the word fear, I mean, it means to be afraid. Phobiamai. We get the word phobias from this. Aren't you afraid? Don't you have some perspective? You're dying here. You're on the cross. You're going to die. What's up with you? That's what he's saying. You know, we deserve to be here. But this guy hasn't done anything wrong. Our justice is right. But Jesus isn't. So you've got this story. So you've got Jesus who doesn't deserve, who's not getting what he deserves. He deserves, you know, praise, honor, you know, anything but that. He deserves a throne. He deserves, you know, to be the king. Then you've got the criminal who's getting what he does deserve, the first criminal. Now, here's where it gets jacked up again, because all of a sudden, the second criminal, he gets what he does not deserve. He gets what he does not deserve. And it's pretty crazy. He says to him, so he yells at the one criminal. Then he says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Now understand this. There is a criminal, two criminals, but this one's speaking now, second criminal, hanging on the cross, has already admitted he deserves to be there. He did something awful. He is dying for it. And this guy has the kahunas to say, Jesus, remember me when you go into your kingdom. That is gutsy. That is like, what are you? Hello, no. You're on the cross because you're a bad person. You don't deserve for Jesus to remember you. You're bad. You did things wrong. You screwed up. You messed up. You deserve to be here. You deserve the punishment you're getting. Who do you think you are to come to Jesus and say, remember me? And that's what we've got here, right? He says, remember me when you come into your kingdom. He says, you're the king, and I know you're the king. When you set up that kingdom, remember me. He has no right. He has no background. He's not like, Jesus, I want you to know that I told one of the soldiers ahead of time to be easy on you when they are beating you. So, hey, remember me. Okay, my name's Sid. Remember me when you get in your kingdom. Just tell them Sid sent you. You know, like, there's nothing there. There's nothing that he owes them. He's not saying, look, Jesus, look, I promise that I'll be really good for the rest of my life. I promise you, Jesus, I will. Jesus, Jesus, just remember me, Jesus, because if you remember me, I'm telling you, I'm going to give everything I have to charity. I'm going to come to church every Sunday. Jesus, if you just give me this, I promise that now I'm going to pray more. I'll be nice to my kids. I'll be nice to that coworker. I'll be nice to that neighbor and their barking dog. There's none of that. He is dying on the cross and he says, Jesus, remember me. That is gutsy. That is gutsy. And here's the crazy part, right? What did Jesus do? Jesus replies and says, I assure you. The Greek word here is amen. That's actually a Greek word, which means it is true. So if you feel the need to be like, amen, you know, go for it. Because it means it is true. He says, amen. I assure you, today you will be with me in paradise. We love that saying, Jesus said that. But this is crazy wrong. There is no way this thief can earn it. There is nothing this thief has done at any point to deserve it. There is nothing right about this. There is no way he can fix it. There is nothing he can improve. And he says, Jesus, remember me. And Jesus, what the heck is he thinking? That's not fair. Jesus says, I assure you, you will be with me in paradise. Based 100% on the belief of that criminal that Jesus is who he says he is. There was no chance for him to make it right. There was no chance for him to be good enough. There was no chance for him to prove that his fruit, you'll know him by his fruit. There's none of that. And yet Jesus gives him heaven, and that's what he means by paradise. He says, look, I'm dying too. And I assure you that when I'm dead and you're dead, we're going to be together. That's jacked up. That is wrong. I mean, where's the justice in that, right? That's not fair. Jesus, I have been following Jesus. Sean Fitch has been following Jesus since I was about 4 or 5. And I have worked hard to follow him and do the right things and to be a good person and to love him with everything I've got. And I've screwed up sometimes. That's not a big deal. Not like him. And I've gone through hard times. I've gone through easy times, but I've gone through some rough things. We've been friends. I've shared your burdens. You've shared mine. You're like, dude, please. You know, and we have gone through a lot. Jesus, this isn't fair because this guy didn't care about you all of his life. He doesn't deserve this. I assure you, today you'll be with me in paradise. Because that criminal was getting what he does not deserve. Jesus is on the cross with that criminal and saying, what, you didn't take the silver? Oh, you forgot the candlesticks too. because this is all what I said earlier called grace. And this is what grace is. Last week we talked about mercy, and mercy is not getting the punishment that we deserve. Grace is getting what we don't deserve, and gifts, getting things that we don't deserve. That is grace, being given something that you don't deserve it. Jesus gave grace to that criminal on the cross. He didn't deserve it. He didn't do anything to earn it. Was never good enough ahead of that point. Was never able to be good enough after that point. And that's what I need you guys to get. If you can read through the Bible, and you can read all the different stories of all the different people, and almost every one of them, you can be like, yeah, well, they had their shot beforehand, or they had their shot afterhand. This guy's got nothing, and Jesus says, I assure you, you will be with me in paradise. Jesus gives this guy grace, gives this guy heaven, and he doesn't deserve it. And Jesus has done the same thing for us, and that's the spoiler. We get what we don't deserve. You do not, I do not deserve the grace that Jesus has offered us. There's nothing, and I'm going to come to this a little bit later too, but there's nothing you can do. I've said this billions of times. There's nothing you can do to make God love you more. And there's nothing that you can do to make God love you less. You don't deserve it, and He gives it to us. That is grace. What, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but hey, spoiler alert. What we deserve is hell. We deserve to die. We deserve Jesus, just like that thief, for Jesus to say, you know what, dude? You messed up. You're a sinner. Goodbye. Sucks to be you. But instead, we get grace. We deserve sin. We deserve punishment. We deserve penalty. And mercy says, I'm not going to give you that punishment that you deserve. And on top of that, I'm going to let you live a life for me. I'm going to give you the privilege of talking to other people about Jesus. I'm going to give you the privilege of being able to lead in worship and watch children's hearts come alive. I'm going to give you the privilege of being able to watch a kid in the nursery and know that later that child said, yeah, you know, I remember being loved. I'm going to give you the privilege of being able to serve and do things. And whether you're directing traffic thing, and this doesn't matter, but people are like, you know what? I never came to church before. I saw someone in the parking lot directing me to a spot, and I felt like, wow, they care about me because no one else has. You get a chance. I mean, Jesus has given us this privilege. I'm going to let you get married. I'm going to give you the privilege of kids. I'm going to give you the wonderful thing of friendship with other people. I'm going to let you see sunrises and sunsets. I mean, everything that we have, we don't deserve it. The only thing we deserve is death and sin, because that's who we are. We are sinners. We are the thief on the cross. And we like to point and say, well, hey, he did really bad things. But you know what? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So let me give you some notes about grace. Just tell you a few things about grace here. I would call these grace notes. Okay. First of all, is that grace is unexpected. Just to help you understand, we are getting what we don't deserve. That is grace. Not getting what we do deserve. We deserve punishment. We don't get that. That's mercy. Jesus could have been done with that. He says, no, I'm going to give you more than that. I'm going to give you paradise. I'm going to give you life eternal with me in my presence. I'm going to give you life now. And Jesus said, life abundant, life to the fullest, life to the max. Totally. Grace is unexpected because we think we deserve it. It's not something we expect or we deserve or we earn. Ephesians 2, Paul talks about this when he writes a letter to the church in Ephesus. He says, God saved you by His grace. When you believe and get it. Right here. Thief on the cross. Jesus saved the thief because of His grace when he believed. God saved you by His grace when you believe. And you can't take credit for this. It is a gift from God. I don't care how good you are, how pretty you are, how nice you are, how well-rounded you are, how rich you are, how poverty-stricken you are, how nice your clothes look, how spiritual you look, how big your Bible is, how big your YouVersion app is, how many plans you read a day. It doesn't matter because there is nothing about you that earns grace. There's nothing about it. That is what grace is. God says, I'm giving it to you, and you don't deserve it. You can't take credit for this. It's a gift from God. Salvation is not a reward for the good things we have done so that none of us can boast about it. Here's the thing, and we've talked about this before, but you can't do enough anyway. If it was about being good enough and doing enough and earning it, we can't do it. It's impossible. And I said, again, sorry for the repeats, but, you know, the world Olympic champion long jumper is probably the one that can jump the longest in the world. That's generally what that title means. But no matter how hard they try, they cannot jump from New York to London. You can't jump from the East Coast of the America of the United States to England. You can't do it. It's the same thing. We can be good and try, but we can't do it. So grace is unexpected. We don't deserve it. We can't take credit for it. And that's what Jesus should have said to the cross, to the criminal on the cross. No, I'm not giving you paradise. You don't deserve this. But instead, he said, I assure you, today you'll be with me in paradise. It's unexpected. I'm sure the people around going, what? How can he do this? So then the second thing is that grace is unearned. You can't earn it. You can't earn it. You can't earn it. And I wish this message could be spread outside of church, because there's so many people that are in the world, that sounds awful, but they're outside of church that think, well, I'm just not good enough. I could never show up. I can't, God would never accept me. I'm not good enough. I don't do enough good things. And that is some messed up message out there, but that is not the story of Jesus. Jesus says, you can't earn it. When you earn something, it's because you have done something and you get rewarded or paid for it. You work the job. And I was actually talking to Josh. He works the night shift and he lost an hour. Like, what do they do about that? Do you get docked in hours of pay because you lose the hour overnight? Apparently not, but that's good. But you know, you work 8 hours and you get paid for 8 hours. It's your wage. It's what you earn for what you've done. And Romans 6:23, Paul talks about this to the church in Rome. He says that for the wages of sin, what do you earn? We are sinners. We are sinners from birth. We are sinners. We don't have to decide to be bad. We already are. And then we decide to be bad anyway. Even when you mess up, Kirk was praying that, you know, I mean, just one is a sinner. One messes you up. And what we earn because of our sin, oh, you want what you deserve? You deserve death. That's what you've earned. But grace is unearned. He goes on and says, the gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus our Lord. That's grace. It's a gift. You don't earn it. You don't deserve it. It doesn't belong to you. If you want what belongs to you, it's death. When I was in graduate school, one of my professors, and it's a long story, but one of my professors, we had a class that was called Spiritual Life, and I think I've shared this with you before. It was a class on spiritual life and growth and evangelism and just kind of all this stuff. And I was out one day. I skipped class as much as I possibly could. I went every day, faithfully, like a good student. I missed a few days here or there. And you were allowed to, because it was a contract grade. You don't need to hear all the boring details of my master's degree. But I missed this one particular class, and I knew by missing it, well, let's back up. There was a paper due that day, and it feels a lot better on your conscience if you just don't show up that day rather than to be there and, you know, fake handing the papers or doing one of these deals where you collect them all from everybody else and pretend like you stuck yours on and you hand them up front. You look at me like you don't know what I'm talking about, because you do. Anyway, but it's a whole lot easier to skip all that and just not go. That makes it a whole lot easier. We got our grades at the end of the semester, and I knew because I missed that paper, and it's a contract grade course, which means you do the work, you get the grade. There's no, like, do it, you get it. And they tell you, you want an A, you do this many things, B, this many things. And I had I got my grade back, and I had an A. And my conscience was kind of bothering me, and I looked, and I had an A for that paper that I never turned in. And this is, you know, we could talk about integrity and a whole other cool story about that or something. But I eventually got the guts and I wrote an email to my professor and said, we actually had email back then. And I wrote an email to my professor and said, you know, you gave me an A for that day and I was out. And he said, well, actually, it was cool because we were talking about spiritual growth and the spiritual life and what it means. That was my grace day. And what I did is I offered to every person in the class to either take an A for this paper or take the credit that you deserve for the paper. And it's up to you, but you have to tell me what you're going to do. If you don't tell me, then I'll just give you the A, because it's grace. It's undeserved. And so I got the A. I was excited about that. But what I found out later was that there were students that were so caught on themselves and their arrogance that they refused that because they wanted to get the grade that they earned, which blows my mind. But we do it all the time. We want what we earned. And if we got what we earned, we would be dead in our sin. But grace is unearned. The third thing is that grace is unfair. And we're going to fly. I've got like 5 pages of slides here with a passage from Matthew chapter 20. And here it is. Let me summarize. Let me sum up. What the story is about, these workers, that there's a guy that owns a vineyard. He owns this field and he wants people to work. And so he goes out early in the morning to the place where you get the workers, the marketplace, and says, "Hey, look, all right, I want to hire you and you and you, and you guys come and work, and I will pay you a day's wage. And let's just call it $10, just to make the math easy for me." So he says, "I'm going to give you $10 because that's what's worth working in the field for a day." And so these guys come back to work in this field, start working in the field in the morning. Then he goes out around 9 a.m. And he goes to see some more guys. And says, "Hey, you know, you want to come and work? All right, I'll pay you whatever's fair." And so they come and work. So the other guy's been working for about 3 hours already. Then he goes around noon and hires. He's like, "None of you guys, you're not working. Why don't you come and work for me? I'll pay you whatever's fair." And so these guys have been working since noon on the same field. And then he goes out around 3. And then he goes out at 5 o'clock, 1 hour before quitting time. And he's like to these guys, "You know, why are you still here?" He's like, "No one hired us today. Hey, look, you come work in my field today, which is only an hour left, and I'll pay you whatever's fair." And so these guys all work. So you got some guys working for, you know, 6 to 6, 12 hours. And then you've got some other guys working for 1 hour and everywhere in between. And so it comes pay time at the end of the night, and the landowner goes and brings up the people that were working for only an hour first. And he gives them, writes out the check and says, "Here's $10. Okay, so the guys that came in the morning are like, "All right, we're going to get a lot of money for this one." And then he writes out the check for the guys at 3 o'clock and it's $10. And he writes out the check for noon and it's $10. And then 9, it's $10. And the guys at 6 a.m., it's $10. And they were upset. Because they said, "This isn't fair. These guys only worked for an hour. How could you give them such a great gift that they never earned or deserved?" And the landowner said, "Did I give you what I promised you?" "Well, yeah." "Then is it wrong for me to give grace?" And I guess that's, you can jump to the last slide of that. "Or are you envious because I am generous?" And Jesus said, this story is an illustration of the way God is towards us. So we don't deserve it. Some people have been following Jesus all their lives, and they get heaven. They get to be with Jesus in paradise. And some people make that decision at the end of their lives, and they still get the same treasure. And that's not fair, but we're okay with that. Because if it was fair and we got what we deserve, we would be in hell and have no hope. And honestly, let's end this whole thing right now. Because this is a waste of our time. Go and do whatever you can because this is all you got. But Jesus says, "Today you'll be with me in paradise." Grace is unfair. It was unfair for that criminal, right? He didn't deserve it. But that's grace. It's getting what we do not deserve. And then finally, grace is unselfish. Here's the thing. And I'm just going to look at this passage real quick in Romans chapter 12. This is Paul talking to the church in Rome. And I'll just look at the first verse of it. He says, "For by the grace given to me, I say to every one of you." He says, look, because God's grace has changed me, I want to remind you, because God's grace has changed you too. Don't think of yourself more highly than you ought. And then he goes on and says, "But rather think of yourself with sober judgment." And he talks about how God has given us gifts and it's our responsibility to care for one another and use those gifts and understand that we were all in the same spot, all hopeless, all in need, desperate need of grace. And God gave it to you, so you better give it to someone else. And that's where we are in this society, right? You do something wrong and you're done. I hate it. I hate it. I am going to screw up. I am going to screw up big time. I probably already have, and I'll keep doing it because I am a sinner. And if you extend the grace to me to say, you know what, we're going to get through this. I love that. I'm not saying, I was talking to somebody the other day. If you do something, you have to go to prison. You're going to go to prison. But there's just this sense of if someone messes up, and this is way old now, but, you know, if you dog fight, if you pay money for dog fights, you're banished for life from everything. And there's no grace in that. And that's the way it is. There was an issue last week with a pastor. He said something, and it blew up online. And everybody's like, "Fire him! Kill him! Kick him out!" These are Christian people, Christ followers, saying this. Where's the grace? Do you remember what God has given to you? Do you remember the grace that you have been given? And I encourage you, we need to share it. We need to give grace to other people and remember that we got grace from Jesus. We didn't deserve it. "Well, you don't know what they did to me." let's look at the thief on the cross. Jesus could have said, oh, I know what you did to me. But I assure you, today you'll be with me in paradise. We need to be givers of grace, because grace is unselfish. So, some things about grace. It's unexpected, it's unearned, it's unfair, and it's unselfish. The spoiler is that we get what we don't deserve. We do not deserve paradise. We do not deserve hope. We do not deserve Jesus. We don't deserve any of it. And He has given it to us. On the cross, He says to the thief, today you'll be with me in paradise. Last week I shared an illustration. I started talking to you about if you happen to be going slightly faster than the speed limit between Milroy, Reedsville and Milroy, and you happen to be doing it at that particular location where they're on the bridge, people. Anyway, they're on the bridge and you get clocked for going over the speed limit. And the speed limit is 55 miles per hour at that location. So if you are going 56, you have become a lawbreaker. You can't deny it. That is the law. If you're going 90, you have become a lawbreaker. And it's the same kind of thing with the thief on the cross. Like, look how much he did. He's going 90. Yeah, but did you go 1 mile over? Well, yeah. So you're all in the same category. You're all sinners. You're all lawbreakers. And I shared about how, you know, if that police officer pulled you over and gave you the fine, wrote out the fine, okay, you were going X number of miles an hour over the speed limit, so that fine is $150. And we talked about you did something wrong. You broke the law. And you deserve a fine. And so that police officer then says, you know what? And he takes out his checkbook or her checkbook and writes $150 and staples it to that fine. Paid the fine for you. You got what you didn't deserve. No, you didn't get. Sorry, you didn't get what you deserve. You deserve punishment and you didn't get it. That's mercy. Not getting the punishment that you deserve. Grace, then, you're on the side of the road, flashing lights in your rearview mirror, feeling a little bit better because the fine is not going to be an issue. Mercy is then flipping the checkbook over to the next page and says, I understand that, you know, things have been tight lately, so I'm going to write a check for $500 for you. That's grace. Undeserved. A gift. And that is what our relationship with Christ is. We are that thief on the cross. No way he could make it right. No way to fix it. No way to be good enough. And Jesus says, I assure you today you'll be with me in paradise. Simply because he believed. Not because of anything he did or hoped to do. And that is what we get. We get grace. We get what we don't deserve. That's the story of the thief. And that's your story. And that's my story. Would you pray with me? God, thank you. Thank you that we get what we don't deserve. I thank you for the story of the criminal on the cross and just how perfect it is. Because there's no room, there's no wiggle room, there's no way for us to kind of work our way around it. There's no way for us to excuse it or ignore it. There is someone that spent their life apart from you and in the very moment where they can't change anything, believed and you offered them paradise. And I pray that you would help us to remember that, to reflect on that, to realize that we have been saved by grace. That because of our belief in Jesus, we have hope of paradise. Without that, we've got nothing. We're the other thief. We're the other criminal. We've got nothing to hope for. But because of belief, God, you've given us the privilege through your grace to be with you in heaven. And I pray for each of us here, if we have made that decision to believe, or maybe we don't believe that we can just believe, help us to take that step and just rest in your grace, rest in the fact that we are being offered paradise without having to do anything for it. And God, I pray that you would help us, those of us that have received grace, those of us that have accepted that grace, to be able to give it to others. Help us to demonstrate grace, not to hold it to ourselves, but to be unselfish and give grace to other people. I thank you that it's not fair. I thank you that we can't earn it and we don't deserve it. Help us to remember that, reflect on it, and love you more because of what you've done for us. That there's nothing we can do to have you love us more. There's nothing we can do to make you love us less. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.